Yeah, I mean, I was also like weirdly obsessed with marketing and things. Like I was on the bus in high school reading books by David Ogilvy, like just for fun, like that, like things that should have been like a red flag at some point of, and still not having any idea that that was the direction I was going to go into. Just loved the idea of tapping into emotion, making people feel things, evoking real want and longing for things was cool. And then you kind of find the manipulative side of it later on, and you're like, okay, maybe I don't like that part as much.
From building a business we're talking about to creating best-in-class client experiences, we're here to explore what it takes to make sure you're top of mind and get the referral every time. Join me as I interview some of the most innovative and inspiring business owners in the online space and discover how you can create more opportunities to ensure your clients are thrilled with your work and make you the obvious choice to send their friends to. It's time to stop going it alone and start transforming your star power into staying power. I'm Dusty Arab, and you're listening to Referral Worthy. Let's get started. Right, this week's episode, we are talking with Jacqueline Pommier, the founder of Self-Righteous and copywriter to a few brands you may have heard of: Nike, BMW, Starbucks, American Express, Fenty, just some little tiny companies, no big deal. She started Self-Righteous in 2020 when so many of the rest of us also started some businesses. Jack, welcome to the show, my friend. I would love, love, love to hear about what it was like starting Self-Righteous. What was that process like for you?
Thanks. And thank you for having me. Coming from ad agency background, I think it was, you know, when you're in originally working in an agency and then agencies are like super intensive, you're moving from campaign to campaign, you're not even really conscious of the fact that you have a process or that you're doing anything really special or anything different. You just get the campaign out. Okay, it was successful, kicked ass, great, on to the next one. And I think I love that work and love the diversity of it and the kind of clients I got to work with, but didn't have that personal connection to the client. Didn't really get to dive in the way that I wanted to with these clients, to understand them, to pick their brain. It was kind of like, you have your senior strategist, like, here's your creative brief, and then you get to work. And so now with Self-Righteous, being able to support, I mean, it's mostly coaches, healers, service providers, but people that have like these big, I want to really mess it up in my industry vibes, and seeing their heart into it and seeing their fire and then getting to go and pair a voice to it. That's just, I think that's been the biggest shift, the biggest wow for me in owning the business as a whole versus just working in part of an agency.
Totally. How long were you in agencies prior to starting Self-Righteous?
Jesus.
I felt that in my soul.
And so, right? Like, and that's not right. Agency work is incredible. It's just the pace. It's a lifestyle. I think they say people that work in marketing agencies have like the shortest life expectancy than any industry in the US right now.
They definitely have the least amount of free time, like 100%.
The stress and the pitches, and so highly competitive. I want to say that I was in agencies for almost a decade, or at least that's what it felt like prior to Self-Righteous.
Okay, so you had really been at the grind for a long time before you were like, okay, that's enough.
Yeah, I mean, I was also like weirdly obsessed with marketing and things. Like I was on the bus in high school reading books by David Ogilvy, like just for fun, like that, like things that should have been like a red flag at some point of, and still not having any idea that that was the direction I was going to go into. Just loved the idea of tapping into emotion, making people feel things, evoking real want and longing for things was cool. And then you kind of find the manipulative side of it later on, and you're like, okay, maybe I don't like that part as much.
It's like the devil's handbook.
Yeah, exactly. It's like this is amazing. And if it's used in the right way, and I think with the right intentions, it can be something incredible.
Absolutely. Yeah. Marketing can be used for good and for evil. We've seen enough really successful nonprofit campaigns and things like that to see it used in ways that doesn't make us feel gross. You know, and you reading things like Ogilvy that early, like I feel like it's relevant here to mention, like, your dad was in ad agencies, right?
Yeah, he was more on the research and strategy side. And funny enough, like he was someone that I always heard complaining about creatives and copywriters and designers. And, you know, he's the one that has to like lasso all the creative minds. And of course, naturally I became that, but also pushed away from it for a while, exactly because of that. I had people like, oh, you're great at writing. You should be a writer. And, you know, you're like, oh, let me find something on the other side of the pendulum for a little bit and pursue that before eventually coming over, because you're making it too easy for me. I have to rebel.
For real. Well, and in your dad's defense, I don't envy anyone who has to wrangle creatives. I do a lot of that myself now. And some days, like, oof.
We're not the easiest. We're not.
That we are not. Okay. So when you think about Self-Righteous and what you've built, I mean, like, it is incredible to me that you only started this company in 2020. And I think we met mid-2020.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. Like not long after you'd started, I legitimately had no idea how new you were to business because you were already such a pro.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
When you think about the people who you were working with back when you first started versus the people who you're working with now, how has your customer avatar evolved?
Wow. That's a great question. I think in the beginning, I had a lot of people that just wanted to figure copy out, right? And I think it doesn't have as much, I think a lot of it also is a reflection of the conversations that were happening in the industry as a whole. I think when Self-Righteous was first coming out, there was a lot of like funnel talk happening. There was a lot of pain point marketing, bro marketing was kind of like hitting its peak. And there was this idea that there's like this perfectly crafted equation of messaging and copy. And if you just figure it out. And I'm not saying, you know, to a degree, it's true. There is a sure. way of doing things, right, that come together. And so I think, and I was so against that. And at the same time, I had a lot of clients coming in that like, so what's the secret ingredient? And I'm like, you want to get into it? Like, you want to break that open? Let's go.
Oh, now, and that's so much scarier.
It is. And it's the same way that we're like, you know, when we go on social media and everything now, and we're like, oh, use the trending audio. It's like, well, someone had to make the trending audio for it to become trending in the first place. So, you know, you can jump onto a fad or you can be the fad. Like, what would you rather do? And what's better for your brand long-term, right? It's, you could, something can peak really quickly, but you're going to be back to square one. So I think that's where it kind of started. Now I find I have a lot more clients that have been in business for quite a while, and they started off as the way that my former avatar was, right? Like, I'm going to find the combination. I'm going to find the equation, my perfect angle. And over the years, they became typecasted. Basically, they ended up having to spend, right, like 5 to 8 years now playing this role in order to continue connecting with their audience in the way there was. And that role wasn't maybe necessarily based on them, or wasn't based on all of them, or it wasn't designed in a way that could grow with them as they personally evolved. And so now, yes, they still want to make a bunch of money, but it's also about, I want to make money and I want to be me. I want to show up. I don't want to have to step into this role every time I show up. I want to be authentic and come in and do what I do in a fantastic way and not have to worry about the rest of it. So yeah, there's definitely been quite a leap.
Do you feel like you've experienced that in your business as well, that leap?
100%. You and I have, we've had conversations about this too before in the past. I think at some point, all business owners realize that our business is us. It's not just something we do. It's an extension of who we are. And a lot of times you may hear about it as people falling out of the honeymoon phase or with their business or things like that. The spark is gone. It's like, no, the spark's not gone. You just evolved. You changed. And it's like, if I go and try to fit my 5-year-old daughter into pants she wore when she was 5 months old, like, it doesn't fit. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with the pants. It's just you grew and you need something that's going to go with you. So I've definitely had that. I think in the beginning, there was more fight in me of like, no, we're going to, I kind of look at it now, it's like the rebellious teenager state of like, no, we're going to show up authentically. God damn it. Like, we're going to fight the marketing system. And now I think it's more of a grown, it's more of an ownership. It's more of like, okay, we're all adults here. We are all bringing some magical shit to the table. Let's organize this in the way that we can make the biggest impact possible for the people that we're trying to serve.
Absolutely. And I think that the way that you've grown as a leader in the space in a lot of ways is really reflective of that too. Something else that you and I have talked about is that when it comes to our particular little pocket of the internet, you're really the only Black copywriter. I mean, I am sure others exist out there, but for powerful women who want to have their copy written by a Black woman, the options are pretty limited.
Hey, that's sad, right?
It is. It is absolutely sad.
Diversity in copy is so important because I think even if you sit down and, you know, you can have hours and hours of calls with somebody, I think culturally there's just nuances, there's memories, there's, you know, little cultural references, there's ways that we ebb in and out of, you know, how we represent ourselves as Black women. That's really difficult, I think, to teach or fill someone in on.
Wait, you can't use ChatGPT? It doesn't speak like a Black woman, Jack?
And ChatGPT will tell you that it's offensive and that it doesn't feel comfortable. Even a robot is like, nah, this isn't my lane. Like, I think I should stay out of this. And like, props to you, ChatGPT. And I mean, and that's kind of how, I mean, if we think about it, right, even if we're looking at things like AI, where it's based on the majority of what's out there, it's just scrolling through what's on the internet, pulling it together. Sure, we can tweak it and change it and everything like that. But because until recently, there's just been such a lack of representation in the internet as a whole, it makes it really difficult to be able to go and tap into that. So hopefully over time, you know, we can develop that further. Absolutely. Hopefully there's more Black women writers and, you know, photographers and directors and people out there that can diversify and shake it up a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like the industry is ripe for disruption right now, and increasing opportunities for folks is, I think, one of the best ways we can do it, for sure.
Absolutely.
Now you're stepping into your fourth year of business. What do you wish you knew back then? If you could go back and tell baby business owner Jack anything, what would it be?
Another great question. Pace yourself. Pace yourself. I think a lot of times when we're starting business, there's always like that next goal line, right? So the first goal line is usually like, I want to be able to support myself, support my family with what I'm making. Cool. And then you get that check mark. And then people's next goal line is usually like, I want to hit six figures or whatever, right? And then we have that next message. I want to hit seven figures. I want the next message. I need a passive income product. I need this. I need that. I need to have everything up and running. And a lot of times we're comparing ourselves out there to businesses that have been out for like 15 years. And you go on and they have everything in their flow working perfectly and beautifully. And they have a piece of content for like everything you can imagine. And we expect to come out of the gate like that on day one. And that's not it at all. I mean, even when I sat down and poured so much time and energy into making those things, because of like what we said, as you evolve, so does your business. So many of those things aren't even in use now, or wasn't in use a year later, just from the way things change. And so I would tell myself, pace yourself. It's going to be very much a process of you put a little out, you get feedback, you go back into the lab, you move things around a little bit, you put it back out. And also,
God, I love that. Really focusing on like letting it be okay to experiment. That's so important, especially that first 2 years of business, I feel like.
It is. You're not going to, if you just wait until you're entirely ready, you have everything figured out and everything perfect, nothing's ever going out into the world. It's just not. And B, even if you're like, I've got it, you're going to get some feedback from your audience, from your clients, whether it's like on the front end or on the onboarding process or whatever it is, that you're like, oh, I didn't realize I needed this, or, oh, this is going to need to be part of it, right? And I remind myself, there is no real copy emergency, right? Like, I'm not doing open heart surgery here. I do not have a pager and I need to run into hospital any minute. What I do is very much a process, and to really do it to the degree that my clients deserve for it to be done, it has to feel like a journey. So yeah, I think that's
Absolutely. And I want to reiterate that for any baby business owners out there, there is no copywriting emergency, just like there is no marketing emergency ever. Things happen during a launch and things need fixed. Absolutely. But 9 times out of 10, it's just somebody with their panties in a bunch. everybody can calm their tits. Like,
absolutely. For real. I've had clients that have launched. I mean, I think we've worked together with people who have been like, I'm going to launch this program with a Google Doc and see what happens. And it sells out. And you're like, damn right. You know, like, it just, if it's feeling very rushed, it's probably not something that should be going out anyway. Yep. And if it's feeling like you have your hands on it too much, it's, you know, you probably need to scale back and simplify it a little bit.
Oh, I love that. Let's talk about where your clients actually come from for a second. Mm-hmm. So right now, where do you get your clients from?
Now I'd say I probably about 90% referral.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. You're a perfect fit for referral worthy then. But if you had to go back and start from scratch today, how would you find those first 10 people?
If I had to find my first 10 people, I believe I'd host a lot of events, a lot of calls, a lot of webinars just to invite people in for value. Because I think what I realized drew in the majority of my clients the first time was, you know, everybody kind of comes in with a preconceived notion of what copy and marketing is, and being able to speak in front of people and kind of change the way they're thinking and challenge the experience that they're having when it comes to copy and copywriters has been such a big part of growing my business as a whole. So I think that's what I would lean in with day one. I think I'd probably host some webinars, host some events, probably partner up with some programs and, you know, see if I could host some different calls in their spaces just to get people to start asking themselves the right question about their content.
So smart. For you, as a professional copywriter, how can copywriting make a small business a referral magnet?
So, I mean, I think the perfect example of this is I recently got a new client who wasn't actually on my list, but was referred to me by someone who was on my list who had never worked with me. Like, just the degrees of that in my brain was like, the referral wasn't even like, oh, I worked with this person and it was an amazing experience. It was a cold lead that then went on and referred to somebody else. And I think it's, if the messaging is consistent and if the messaging, again, is making people think, making people question, making people wonder, if you're speaking more to the experience that you want to create, which I think is why this person referred it to their friend. They were like, this sounds like what you're looking for in a person. You're not just looking for someone, right? To say, hey, I'm looking for a copywriter. There's a million copywriters out there, right? There's so many of us. But the experience you have with that copywriter, the amount of handholding you want to have to do or not have to do, the degree that you want someone to be able to get you or understand the message or kind of those things, I think, is what is mostly can be communicated in copy to the degree where it feels like someone's having the experience and they can refer you even if they haven't actually worked with you.
And I will absolutely reflect that experience back. Like my largest client right now, I had a very similar experience. I was referred to them by somebody who I'd never worked with. And she wasn't even on my list, to be honest. We had met in a Facebook group back in like 2017. And I'd never had a conversation with her personally, but she had followed me on Facebook all that time. And so when somebody needed a marketing strategist, she threw my name in. And when I asked her about it afterwards, I was like, hey, thank you. First of all, what made you refer me? She was like, oh, I caught a vibe. I thought you guys would vibe. And really, that's really what a lot of that comes down to. It's like, oh, that's exactly what you're looking for. God love the connectors for connecting us to those people.
Oh, yeah. And I think, I mean, and it really just kind of goes to show, I mean, and I would love to go back and see like how much of your content and how much of your stuff the person that referred you actually engaged with, right? Because a lot of times we're looking at, do people like, do people comment, did they click, did they open, right? As a range of whether or not we're really getting our message out there. But there's so many like silent followers. There's so many people watching, so many people that know your energy and are carrying that with them into all these different rooms that they're going into. You never know what seeds you're unintentionally watering.
Mm, fabulous. All right, Jack, last question. What makes a business referral worthy to you?
Soul, to me, is huge. And I don't mean soul in the way of like someone that is giving way, way more than, you know, I believe in giving value. I don't believe that people have to be excessive in the amount of value they give to be referral worthy. I think people that give the energy that they are invested in your mission and what you're trying to create, that treat you in a way that you're not just another customer, another dollar sign, another, you know, mark to get to their revenue goal. People that really show up and listen and come in with an open heart and are like, yep, I'm in. I'm wearing your jersey. I'm here to represent you. Those are the people that I would refer to everybody, the people that are insanely passionate about their work and to a degree where it probably annoys the crap out of them and maybe some of the people around them. Those are the people that I would refer to. And I think it's funny, most of the people that I refer to, I don't even think they have like the most polished online, you know, representation. You're not going to go and see like everything ultra super branded. And a lot of that sometimes is because they're busy doing what they're doing. You know what I mean? They're so invested and they're so in love with what they do. That's where their energy is going rather than trying to appear to be something else. Right. So those are the things that I definitely look for when I'm like, this is the person.
Gorgeous. Everybody, this has been Jacqueline Pommier from Self Righteous. You're not going to get the spelling right the first time. So take a look at the show notes if you want to connect with her. I highly, highly recommend getting on her email list. It's always incredibly useful in addition to being hilarious and usually being where I steal my best gifts from. So Jacqueline, thank you again. It has been a pleasure having you.
Thank you for having me.
Is your business referral worthy? Take the quiz at thereinvention.co/quiz to find out and get specific actionable tips to take your business from best kept secret to book solid. Thanks for listening to Referral Worthy. If you like this episode, make sure to subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts.